Welcome to Talk is Jericho. We are still the Pod of Thunder and Rock and Roll. The remedy for boredom has arrived. And guess what? It's Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday, Friday. And guess who's back at WWE and also back here for a second appearance on Talk is Jericho, talking with the man, Seth Rollins, the man who went under injury as the world champion. For 7 months, he was out. He made a surprise return at Extreme Rules a couple weeks ago, and I was surprised as well. Didn't even know he was there. Thought he was, you'll find out who I thought he was. You hear how Seth and the WWE managed to keep that a secret. He's also talking about the injury that sidelined him for 7 months, what happened, rehab process, what he did with his extended time off. It wasn't all video games and TV watching. Elon Musk played a small part in Seth's downtime, and if you don't know who Elon Musk is, Seth will clue you on that as well. Plus, we'll talk about his new electric car. We'll talk about the match where he destroyed John Cena's nose and the crazy, ridiculous finish he and Randy Orton came up with at the end of their match at WrestleMania 31. A lot of laughs and a lot of great stories with my boy Seth. Lots of talk about fan art that we always send to each other. But first, if you're looking for another guy who's got a great story, you got to pick up The Resurrection of Jake the Snake on DVD or Blu-ray. Now listen, Diamond Dallas Page rehabbed the life physically, mentally, all across the board of Jake the Snake Roberts, and Page and director Steve Yu have outdone themselves with both the documentary itself and the DVD with the documentary. It's got 20 bonus features, including a commentary track narrated by Dallas, Jake himself, and of course Steve, the director. You got to listen to this. Jake is he's honest, man, and so is Dally too. It's a really, really riveting account of what they went through while they're making this film. And I'm not kidding when I say it's one of the best documentaries you'll see, whether you're a wrestling fan or not a wrestling fan. Think Anvil, the story of Anvil, or B-movie, like some of these really American movie, some of these really great documentaries that we've seen over the years, King of Kong, or whether you're a fan of the movies or not, or sorry, a fan of the subjects that they discuss or not, you're a fan of the characters in the movie, and this is definitely one of them. You'll see Jake the Snake battle back from certain death. I mean, he was in people's death pools for years. He battled back to reclaim his life, his family, his career. It's very inspirational, and like I said, quarterback by Diamond Dallas Page. It's a powerful story about redemption and second chances. And right now, you can get the collector's edition of The Resurrection of Jake the Snake at jakethesnakemovie.com. That's jakethesnakemovie.com. And if you use my promo code Y2J, you get 10% off anything you buy on jakethesnakemovie.com for a limited time. But listen, we're going to hook up one lucky winner right now for a free copy of the collector's edition of the Blu-ray. All you got to do is tweet Resurrection of Jake the Snake Blu-ray to @TalkIsJericho and @RealDDP and use the hashtag DDPYoga. I will choose one random winner momentarily. You got to see this documentary. Like I said, I loved it so much. As a matter of fact, I'm going to watch it again tonight. You're going to be inspired, and you're going to it's going to be a tear in your eye. I mean, Jake the Snake was a hero to a lot of us when we were wrestling fans as a kid, and to see kind of his huge fall from grace and then his huge ride back up to the top, it's riveting, and you're not going to want to miss it. So go check out the documentary, be inspired, and then give DDP Yoga and the DDP Yoga Now app a try yourself. This is what saved Jake the Snake's life. It changed my life, saved my wrestling career, saved my music career, saved my quality of life. I want you to want me and to try DDP Yoga. And all you got to do is go to ddpyoga.com/Jericho and get 3 free months of the DDP Yoga Now app with your purchase of DDP Yoga. Change your life. Go to ddpyoga.com/Jericho. Be inspired, okay? Get The Resurrection of Jake the Snake on DVD at jakethesnakemovie.com. You are not going to want to miss this. Go check it out now. All right, so the huge return last week of Seth Rollins. Which is great because you've been gone. I didn't even realize you said 6 months.
Almost seven months.
Yeah. But it's like every couple of days I get really, like, I shouldn't say bad fan art, but people draw pictures. It all started when we did our last podcast.
Yeah.
They drew a picture of us.
Uh-huh. A picture of our selfie, yeah.
Yeah. Where we look like the Bat Boy from the National Dude,
it's pretty brutal. It's one of my all-time favorite pictures.
Yeah.
If I ever just need a good chuckle, I'll scroll through the details and find that one. Just get a good, because it's crazy. You look like Sloth from the Goonies. Like, we look crazy.
And for whatever reason, it's become the tradition. Whenever I get some fan art that's maybe not professional, shall we say. I'll send it over to you. And it's like, there's been some, like, the ones with like the weird needle fingers.
Needle fingers,
the
yeah.
Eight abs.
Long abs,
long
too.
Abs.
Yeah.
But yeah, so that is kind of our way of keeping in touch. And now you're actually back here again. Your second Raw back. And I mean, the cliche question is, how does it feel? But how does it feel?
And the cliched answer is it feels great, but it yeah. feels great. You know, yeah. you sit and you watch for 7 months and you kind of, you do really envision what it's going to feel like when you step back in there, you know, and the fan base has been super cool and super, you know, supportive during the time off. So being able to come back, the surprise, obviously, at Extreme Rules was fun. And then the next night on Raw with the anticipation, it was a good feeling, man. I was a little nervous, to be honest with you, because, you know, it's not like a bicycle. It's you get out there and, you know, you get the promo and I'm like, all right, can I do this again? Is it everything that I remember? But once I got in the ring and put the microphone in my hand, it was like, I was like, oh,
right back.
Yeah,
back.
I was like, oh, okay, I got this.
It's interesting though, because that happened to me in '94. I broke my arm. It's obviously not as bad as your injury, but I was out for 6 weeks. But before that, I was invincible. I'll jump over the top rope to the floor and I'll do whatever, powerbomb from the top rope. Once you get hurt like that, it reevaluates that we're actually human beings.
You know,
did you feel that?
Yeah, you know, and I was one of those guys who, I was invincible. I always said, oh, I never get hurt. I never get hurt. And I used to freely say it, and everyone was like, no, don't say that. Knock on wood. Whatever you do, don't say it. You're just going to jinx yourself. And I was that guy that was like, no, I'm invincible. My training will separate me from, you know, the other guys that get hurt, all this, yada, yada, yada. And, of course, it happened on something that I do all the time, a very routine, you know, for me, routine move.
Let's talk about that.
Yeah.
You're in the match with Kane.
Right? Uh-huh. And match with Kane, first night of the European tour, defending the title over there, and we're in Dublin, and I'm just doing, we're at the end of the match, it's like a no DQ match, I think, and just one of those things where Kane's 300 pounds, so I can't powerbomb him from the ground, so, you know, he's up on the second rope, and I sunset flip over him, and I usually just land on my feet, get myself set, and then I can lift him up off the second and move him around, and I was going to put him through the table, and I flip over him, and Kane's, this is the first time I've done this to Kane, and he's legitimately 7 feet tall, 330 pounds, and a big guy to be up on those ropes. So
right.
whether or not his size and just body position changed my landing or whatever, or if it was just an off night for me, whatever, but I landed on the instep of my right foot, and my knee just went, boom, inward, and I was, I mean, if, you know, you're listening to the podcast, you've probably seen the footage a million times.
It's ugly when you watch it.
Yeah.
It's one of those ones you don't want to really watch more than, yeah.
Yeah, and it felt strangely normal, you know? I mean, for we do it so much that we always, there's always something, you know, where you're like, ooh, that was a little weird, and you kind of shake it off, and everything's like, oh, wait, no, I think that's all right. And then maybe the next day, and it just kind of lingers and goes away. So that it was like that. It was a quick bam, and I was like, ooh, shoot. And then my knee felt a little loose, and I've sprained my MCL before, so like I kind of thought it was something along those lines, you know? And I was able to finish the match and still do, you know, I still picked Kane up and powerbombed him through the table and still did the pedigree, and I was okay and went to the back. And I have kind of – my knees are very mobile anyway, so when the docs were checking me out, they were – you know, didn't all appearances, there wasn't a whole lot of swelling. It didn't seem like anything was too wrong. So I put a brace on it, got on the jet. We went to Cardiff, and I was planning on doing the rest of the tour. Like, I was like, I'll just do some tag matches for a couple nights or
something. How many shows were left?
I mean, that was literally the first night, so we had two weeks left. So
wow, another 14 days.
Yeah. So
and those, we work in Europe. Every night,
yeah. There's no in between. Yeah. So I thought, yeah, it'd be fine. Just do some tag matches, take it easy for a couple days while it, you know, heals up. But we did MRI just to be sure in Cardiff on Monday, and then I got a call from Doc Damon, and he's just like, nah, you're not you're not going to do the rest of the tour. We're going to send you to Birmingham because you tore, you know, both your MCL and ACL.
Wow.
And the meniscus is damaged.
That's the triple whammy.
Yeah, that's those, the big one.
That's all three, yeah.
All of them, yeah. So that's, I mean, those are the worst things to get done because the other ligaments, and even the MCL, when it's torn, can be, you can work through it a little bit with a brace. And ACL guys put on a brace and they can work through it. The meniscus is painful if it's torn, but a lot of times if it's just the meniscus, they'll just take it out. And you'll feel okay after a couple weeks. This one was all three. They had to repair all of it. So it was, you know, they gave me 6 to 9 months for recovery. Wow. Yeah.
Now, as a highly trained athlete, you mentioned you train hard, CrossFit, plus in the ring, doing all of these great matches, and plus you're the world champion. How do you feel when they say, hey, man, you've got 6 to 9 months vacation?
You know, it was a lot of feelings at once, because as the champion, man, there's a lot of pressure. And you put that pressure on yourself to go out every night and perform, because you want the title. You want to be in that spot. That's why we all get into this business, to be that guy. And, you know, to know that that's not, you don't have a choice anymore, and they're just going to take that away from you. What you pretty much worked for your whole life, for one split second, you know, one wrong landing is a heartbreaking feeling.
Mm-hmm.
I was just like, man, what? Like, you know, you work, and then all of a sudden it's gone. It's just, it's literally like you're, if your girlfriend is up and left you one day, the love of your life, you got everything you ever want, and then poof, gone. You come home to an empty house. You took your dog, took your furniture, and you're just like, well, now I got to start over.
Mm-hmm.
So it was tough. That part sucked a lot. At the same time, I had not really had, I've been doing this 12 years. I hadn't had a period of time off, especially since I started with WWE 6 years ago, almost 7 years ago now. So I hadn't had any extended time off, just been running from NXT all the way through. And so to an extent, I needed the break. I just didn't know it right away, you know. Right away, I was just like, oh, this sucks. Let's get back to work. Or is there something else we can do? You know, you explore other options. But, yeah, it sucked, man. And even I watched the show in Cardiff, you know, and just knowing you were going to miss out on that, it was really frustrating. It just, you feel like you disappoint everybody and you're letting everybody down. And that's not a good feeling. But like I said, I put that pressure on myself. So it's not like any of the boys or the fans were like, screw you, Rollins.
Yeah.
Actually, except, and maybe we're on the podcast, I have all the respect in the world for this guy, but this one hurt my feelings more than anything, was Bret Hart. Bret Hart had some comments about me and my, how safe I am in the ring because of John's nose. And then me getting hurt while I was the champion, and just said that you couldn't do that because people relied on you as a top guy. And that hurt my feelings. Like, and I haven't seen Bret since then, but like, I mean, I know he comes from a different era when he worked through a lot of stuff, but man, like that sucked. That hurt my feelings. I'm like, dude, I idolized you. Like, you were one of the guys who at, 6'1", 230, you were a guy who I was like, hey, I can do that because Bret Hart does it. So, like, for him to, like, I mean, he's got to know how hard I'm working every night. For him to kind of say that in an interview, I think it was like a Sports Illustrated interview. I was like, man,
that sucks. That you can't get hurt when you're the champion, what choice do you have? Like you said, it's not like you do, okay, I'm going to do a triple Lindy off the top rope to the floor. It's pretty much an everyday move, which is how you get hurt.
Yeah.
It's never on the dangerous Phoenix splash you can do and all that stuff. It's always in stuff like that. So where is the choice that you had?
Yeah, I don't know. I mean, unless it was, I would love to have the discussion with him, you know, to be like, hey, like, what did you mean by that? Is there something I can learn from this experience? You know, because for me, like you said, it was a very routine, as simple as a clothesline.
Not a dangerous.
Not a dangerous. I've done it literally a million times. Never even had close to an issue with it. So it wasn't even something that I considered. Like, oh, this is a problem. Like, for me, it was a safe way to put Kane to the table. So, that one hurt my feelings. So, yeah, you put that pressure on yourself, but he was the only one who kind of was like, made me feel like, oh, man, I need to reevaluate my situation here?
But another thing, too, is Bret, of course, was put out of wrestling by a super kick from Goldberg.
Yeah.
That'd be like saying, hey, Bret, you know, you shouldn't have gotten a bad concussion and being taken out of wrestling by a super kick. Like, how do you know?
Yeah, so. That's what, and you look at, you know, and it's the safety thing, too. You and I both know accidents happen in the ring. That's, by no means did I intentionally want to break John Cena's nose. By no means, you know what I'm saying?
Right.
Yeah, no means did I want to do that. And any time, and I've been hurt by people, and they've hurt me, and that's just how, that's the gig, right? That's the gig, so it's fine. And I'm like, there's plenty of guys who, you know, have been hurt in that position. I'm like, come on, man. I mean, maybe if he's just trying to get some, you know, stir the pot a little bit.
He says stuff sometimes where you'd be like, what? He said some stuff about me one time. He said that watching Jericho's match, it looks like he's reciting the Gettysburg Address during every match because I'm so blatantly calling spots.
Oh, for God's sake.
And it's like, really? Like, you have to say that? Like, come on, man.
Yeah.
You know? Like, now I want to go watch, like, any Bret Hart match and see, oh, I saw you calling something. But, you know, some guys just say certain things, you know, and that's just the way it is. But
yeah.
The scene of breaking of the nose, because that was, and listen, when we sign up to do this business, it's like signing up to be a soldier or a lumberjack. Like, hey, the tree fell on Sammy the lumberjack. Well, you kind of, you know.
Sure.
But that nose was brutal. Like, it was the worst looking broken nose I've ever seen.
Yeah, that was really bad. I mean, and he looked gnarly. I felt so bad.
Was that from a knee or what did you do?
Yeah, it was just a knee. We were trading shots and like I threw a high knee just for some separation so we could get to, you know, whatever the next thing we were doing was. And for whatever reason, I mean, look, John will be the first guy to admit he's a clumsy fella. He's not a graceful individual.
That's true.
And he kind of, you know, when he's not sure about stuff for his own protection, a lot of times he'll put his body into whatever you're doing. Like if you're throwing punches at him or forms, he leans a little bit. And what it was just one of those things where we talked about it. First time I had really tried it, but we didn't, you know, it wasn't something we went over. And for whatever reason, the timing of it was just, we'll call it perfect or imperfect, whatever you want. But man, I wear knee pads too, you know, like a pretty thick knee pad. And I felt that thing, heard it through the nose, just a pop and a crunch. And like he went down and I was like, oh no, this is no good. And then he went down, went to the corner, and you know, I'm just doing my thing in the ring, waiting to see. And then he comes up like a bat out of hell, just blood face, like, ah! He looked like Brad Pitt in Fight Club.
Oh,
like,
yeah.
When he's, you know, he's, come on, Lou. And then like he finally drops him and you think he's fine. And then he jumps back up and he's, with all the blood on the face. Yeah, that's what he came at, just throwing haymakers, just like, rah, 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 rah. And then sure enough, as soon as I took a shot at him, he went right back down. But like, I was like, oh my God, this guy's an animal, man. And like, they wanted to stop the match so bad. You know, they got the gloves on,
right.
He's bleeding profusely and they're trying to stop it. But I mean, it was, like you said, it was a gnarly break. They had to show the picture in black and white on Raw because we couldn't even do it in color because it was so gruesome. And so, what a warrior he is, because he went and got emergency surgery like that week or whatever. He missed, I want to say, 2 weeks, 3 weeks, maybe at most, and was at, and it wasn't just like, oh, we're going to reset your nose. Like, it was up into his orbital bone. Like, it was a bad break. He had to get a lot of stuff fixed in there. And they even told him, hey, this is what we're doing temporarily. We're going to have to do more down the road.
Oh wow.
Because this is a good chance this may not, you know, sit right. So be careful, yada yada yada. And then he was there in Brooklyn for SummerSlam and we were doing everything in the book. So he's just, dude, he's whatever you say about John, and I love the guy, but whatever people say about him, he is one tough, dedicated dude.
He's an X-Man.
Like, yeah,
that's mutant. His mutant powers of healing.
Yeah,
he's the same guy that went and had that neck surgery that all, like, Steve had it and Edge had it. Like, that you're done or cleaned up, whatever it was. He got the neck surgery and showed up later that afternoon at Raw just to hang out. And of course, you know, John didn't sell a damn thing.
No,
what are you doing? What do you mean? Why are you here? Why wouldn't I be here? You just got surgery, you know. So, yeah. You know, so yeah, like you said, that's just kind of the guy that he is.
And he's always been my measuring stick. Like, he's been my guy, you know, because when I came into the company, he's the top guy. So he's the guy who I look at as the example for who do I want to be? Mm-hmm. I want to be in that. I want that spot. So how does John operate? That's how I operate. So a lot of my, you know, I train when people don't want to train. And I, like, my rehab for the knee, like, I was like, well, if John is going to get back in however many months, then that's where I got to target that. You know what I'm saying? So, and that's really an unreasonable expectation because, like you said, he's got mutant powers. But it's a good example. He's legitimately a great example for younger guys and just how hard to work to be in that position because it takes a lot. I mean, just today, for example, he was in New York this morning doing the Today Show and
right.
flew here and he's here at Raw before me. So it's
but you did beat him by a week. So you got that.
I did beat him by a week. I was very very happy about that. Yeah.
Well, that's another thing too. When you got hurt, it was like right in the middle or the start of or one of these horrible rash of injuries. Cesaro went out at the same time. John Orton.
Yep.
Bunch of guys. And with big long-term 6-7 month injuries.
Yeah. You know? You look at it. I mean, it trickled down too. Randy, I think, was out before me. And then I went out, and then John, and then Cesaro within a month. And then you had Neville, right?
Neville got hurt.
Then you had Harper. And now you had Wyatt.
Right.
You had all these guys. And we're talking Cesaro, Neville, myself, three of us never, like Neville's never had an injury ever in his career. I've never had anything that's put me out longer than a couple of, you know, I had neck surgery when I was 24. That put me out a couple months. Mm-hmm. But that was it. And Cesaro too, never had an injury that had taken more than a couple weeks. That was just a nagging thing. So who knows? Mm-hmm. It was just some bad water. I don't know.
Yeah.
One of those freak things, man. And people kind of point fingers and say the style and the schedule and yada, yada, yada. But it's just one of those things.
That's always been there. The style and the schedule has been the same for years.
Yeah, yeah. You know, I don't think that's
it. Just like you said, it's just some bad luck and some – I think all of us get one injury in our career at some point.
Sure.
So hopefully that was it for all of us.
For all of us at once, right?
So yeah. When you finally start coming to terms with the fact – like I remember when I got suspended – for kicking the flag, it was for a month. And the first week, I was so mad and like angry. And then the second week, I was like, "Oh, this isn't so bad." And then the third, and fourth week, I was like, "This is great." Because, like you said, you never get a break unless you get hurt.
Mm-hmm.
So, how was it for you? When how long did it take for you to realize, okay, listen, I got to just make this work now?
Well, I'm a goal-oriented kind of dude. So, like, from day one, I put a date on it. I said, this is when I want to try to get back. I'm going to do whatever I can rehab-wise. I'm going to focus on that and try to use it as a distraction to take my mind off of being gone from the road and from the life that I'm used to. But to be honest, the first 2 months really were gnarly because I'm in a leg brace that keeps your knee straight the whole time.
Wow.
With the MCL. So, like, sleeping in that thing, there's a considerable amount of pain, and you know, you take they give you the pain pills and stuff like that, and I'm not a pill guy, I don't like them, so I'm trying to wean them off, but it's too soon, so then I'm hurting and I'm not sleeping, and it just, I had to have been, I mean, I'm a miserable person as it is, so I can only imagine what kind of human being I was for the first 2 months. So the people that were around me, if you're listening to this, thank you very much for being there for me and understanding how terrible it was for me. For I mean, November, December were just garbage, mm-hmm. just garbage months for me. But then after that, you know, the brace came off. I started to be able to sleep better, and I was watching football. I'm like, couch every Sunday, you know, and I was hanging
out. You said that to me.
Yeah, I was hanging out with my friends, and I got a new car that I could drive, and I could take trips whenever I wanted, and like sleeping in my bed every night, you know. So like that kind of stuff, you take it for granted when you do this job, because don't get me wrong, we love the job.
Absolutely.
We love it. It's great. It's amazing. There's literally nothing else I would rather do than travel the world and perform for the fans. That's what I love to do. Tell stories, all that good stuff. But you take for granted the little things that you leave behind, the family, the friends, and just the you know, sitting on your butt playing video games for a day, or like being able to go to your own gym and even eating on the regular basis, or you know what I mean, just little stuff like that. It's stuff you take for granted that everyone else kind of just does in routine. And like I was having like I was having weekends, you know what I mean, like it would get to like Saturday and people were like free, and I'm like, oh, a week. This is like a weekend, right?
Yeah, this like a real person.
Yeah, it's what you do. You like grind Monday through Friday, and then you hang out on the weekends, right? It's so weird. It's crazy.
Yeah.
But yeah, it was a good time, man. I really enjoyed the process, and as far as you know, I watched the show every week, and I enjoyed, but I was able to look at it, watch it a little bit differently, you know, and not like when you're in it, it's different.
How is it watching it when you're not in it?
Well, when you're in it, you're in a bubble. You know, it's very hard, especially for me. When I left, I was doing on Raw, I was doing just massive amounts of work every week where I would do a promo and two-seg match and, you know, a lot of backstage stuff. So it was so hard for me to keep an eye on what everybody else was doing. And just the quality of the program in general, mm-hmm. I could sometimes I would get done and I'd get in the car and I'd ask Cesaro, I'd be like, hey, how was the show? Or like, how's my stuff? Was it any good? Like, because I don't know. I did so much, and you can't look at it as a whole. You have to just focus on one piece of it. Otherwise, you're gonna lose. You know, you're gonna get sidetracked and lose your frame of mind. So you got to just focus on one thing at a time. And so watching it from a distance, I was able to watch it somewhat as a fan, as much of a fan as we can watch it anymore, but also just be able to see the entirety of the show, see how the stories are laid out, just kind of watch the progression that the characters go through. It was just cool to see it, and you get a different appreciation than when you're in it. You mm-hmm. step outside the bubble and kind of see how, you know, because you know how it gets done every week, and now you get to step outside and watch and know, like, oh, man, that's going to be tough. That's just a tough one. Or, man, they killed that. You know what mm-hmm. I'm saying? And I texted you a couple times yeah. talking, just having, because you were having some great matches. And I was just a real big fan of your work the last couple months, just the heel stuff, oh, just thanks, going man. Out of your way. But, I mean, just, God, you know, just I love being a heel. So yeah. I just appreciate when guys take the time to actually do it, you know. So it's nice. It was just nice to watch. So, and I sent texts to some other guys just talking, you know, every once in a while I'll be like, you know, I talked to Becky Lynch and give her a little bit of this and that, or Cesaro, and I would he would text me every week and ask about the show. And the guys that were out too, when Cesaro was out and John was out, we would back and forth a little bit, or Harper too. Yeah, just as, you know. So, and it just lets you, you know, get a different view of it. And it's interesting too, because then they started bringing in a lot of these new cats, right? The Bullet Club guys and AJ and the, you know, Anderson and Gallows, and then Sammy came up, and there's just a lot of new big casts, Enzo, all the NXT guys they brought up. And I'm like, man, you start to, after a while, be like, do I fit into this anymore? Yeah, is there right. a spot for me, you know?
Well, you're right. You know, you feel that too. Like, I think the other day I was in a tag match with Sammy and Ambrose and Kevin Owens, and I'm looking, I'm like, gosh, these guys are all, like, you know, 30 years old. And, like, new era. Like, when's Vince going to call me and just say, okay, it's time to go home? You know what I mean? Like, is that going to happen? What am I going to do? But you wonder about that sort of stuff, because the point of the business is to always have new talent come in.
Yep.
And especially these guys, your guys' generation reminds me of my guys' generation, where guys were working around the world.
Yep.
And when they come to WWE, they have all this experience. And we kind of went away for that for a while. And yep. now we're back with all you guys. Did it that way.
Yeah, it's refreshing to see. And there, like you said, we went away from it for a while, and there was certainly my group of guys, there was certainly an apprehension. We didn't know if the business would ever go back to that being that way, where we took guys who had taken the time to get the experience and put them in positions to succeed when the time was right, because that's how it had been for mm-hmm. a very long time. Obviously, the advent of the developmental system changed that a little bit, in the way they were scouting talent and stuff, and yada, yada, yada. A lot of factors that went into that. But now, like you said, it's back to that, I feel like. And the guys, and Triple H has a lot to do with that, the way he's scouting talent and bringing in guys from the independents and stuff like that. But it's just it's great. It's really awesome to see guys get opportunities that maybe, you know, people thought never would. I never thought Kevin Owens would get an opportunity here.
Yeah, the antithesis of what a WWE superstar looks like.
It looks like 100%.
Quote, unquote.
Yeah. And I always loved Kevin. I've been friends with him for years. I think his work is great. But, I mean, even his work, people were like, oh, that's not the WWE style. He doesn't have the WWE look. Like, yeah, the kid can cut a promo. You know what I mean? There's all these things, but. And the fact that the guys are getting opportunities, a Sami Zayn, an Apollo Crews, you know, myself, people forget that I'm kind of lumped into that. Mm-hmm. I'm in that generation, too.
You are,
so,
sure.
I just think that's awesome. It's really refreshing to have that. But at the same time, like you said, there's only so many spots. Mm-hmm. And so when you're out of action and you're seeing these spots getting filled, you're like, hey, is there a place for me here? Yeah. Is there a spot for me? So there's certainly, again, that added to the nervousness of, you know, coming back and knowing if I could hang. So it's cool. The competition's good. Iron sharpens iron type thing, but it's a good nervous energy.
Talk to Vince at all, or Triple H, when you got hurt? Like, when you get hurt, the first thing you're like, I'm so sorry, I got hurt. Like, did you ever get any words of like, hey, don't worry, just get better and you're all?
Yeah, that was all I got, you know. And as we were getting closer to WrestleMania time, I was always kind of like poking my head in, seeing, like, you know, texting here and there, hey, what's going on, you know, I'm feeling pretty good, because I wanted to be on that show badly, And but yeah, I mean, Hunter was, you know, he's been my guy, and he always from day one was like, just dude, just get healthy, don't worry about it, you know.
He knows the feeling too.
He knows it. It happened to him multiple times where he had to take, you know, 6-9 months off. I mean, his quad was almost a year.
Yeah, that's
first
right.
Quad tear. So
that's true.
He knows. He gets it. But again, they're looking at business from a long term perspective. I just turned 30. I've got a lot of years left, yeah. And they're not wanting me to rush back and, you know, put my knee in a compromising position, or the rest of my body for that matter. If I'm weighing on the knee a little bit too much, or my mind's not, if it's not all there, you know, they wanted me to be 100% ready to go. Let's make sure that you're good before we get moving. So,
all right, you guys know that I travel every week for AEW, and I'm on the road for Fozzy as well, but I don't worry about appliances or any of the stuff at my house breaking down while I'm gone, because we've got American Home Shield. And truthfully, I'm not a fix it myself guy anyway, so even if I was home and we had a leaky faucet or a faulty water heater, I'm not the one who's going to fix it. And unexpected breakdowns like that won't break your bank with American Home Shield warranty, because covered repairs and replacements are taken care of just like that. You just choose a plan that works for you and your budget. And then when a covered item in your home breaks, contact American Home Shield, and their trusted and qualified pros will fix or replace it based on the coverage in your agreement. Right now, you can get 20% off. Just go to ahs.com/Jericho and save that 20%. That's ahs.com/Jericho for 20% off any plan. American Home Shield, don't worry, be warranty. See ahs.com/contracts for coverage details, including limit amounts, fees, limitations, and exclusions. New Jersey residents, the product being offered is a service contract and is separate and distinct from any product or service warranty which may be provided by the home or building manufacturer. All right, we're sitting here still with Seth Rollins, and you were just talking about all the new guys who've been coming into the WWE and the new attitude of hiring guys from the indies.
Yep.
Do you watch anything other than WWE? Do you kind of know what's out there?
I keep tabs on it a little bit, and I mean, I don't sit and, like,
okay,
you know, watch the shows and stuff like that, but I keep tabs here and there. I, man, once I started on the road here, probably like after the first year, I just don't, it's so hard for me in my free time to just watch wrestling.
I hear you.
Watch it. Because I watch all the live events, so watch all the matches, TV. I try to keep track of what I can when I'm here, but, you know, you're so immersed in it that when I have the downtime, I need to chill, you know.
The last thing you want to do is watch wrestling.
But I do keep tabs on it, you know, especially when there's something with a lot of hype. So I just took the time to watch the Ricochet and the Will Ospreay match from New Japan.
I haven't seen it. I heard it was amazing.
Oh, it was incredible, you know, and there's a lot of old-timers out there that want to say that they're, you know, they're not selling and this and that and yada yada, killing the business. I'm like, oh, get out of town.
Yeah.
Just give me a break. But whatever. Both of them super athletic, incredible, like incredibly talented, high flying dudes. Like, I think William Regal put up a great tweet about it. If you have the time to go check it out, I don't want to even try to quote it because I'll screw it up and I'll do a bad English accent. But he's a guy who, you know, 30 plus years in the business, and he's been all over the world, seen every single style you could ever think of, and is a stickler for storytelling and detail. And he, I didn't say he put the match over, but he was, you know, basically like, come on, guys, give me a break.
I think, you know, and if you had Ricochet in there against, you know, me or you, we would have a different style of match.
Yeah.
But when you have those two guys, that's their forte.
Mm-hmm.
Let them unleash and do that.
Yeah.
That's the idea.
Yeah. I mean, that's what we do. It's about creating a connection with the audience.
Yes.
And no one wants to read a bad story, so they could sit there and work a body part and tell a story. But if they suck at it, then what's the point, right? Mm-hmm. So create the connection with the audience. And if that's how you do it, you know, the trapeze artists at a circus still create a connection with the audience. Yeah. You go to Cirque du Soleil, you see all the different circus acts, you know what I'm saying? So, like, I want to see all that stuff. I want to see the guys on the trampolines, and I want to see the strongmen, and I want to see the contortionists. I want to see all that stuff.
Yes.
So, just, I don't know.
I was reading, I think it was Vader that was talking to Ren. I don't even know why someone pointed this out to me or something. So I checked it out and had this big, long tweet about what you were saying.
Yeah.
And he's like, flying all over the place and this, that, and the other thing. I was like, weren't you known for doing a moonsault?
Yeah.
Wasn't, like, that the big draw of Vader's, that he does a moonsault? Yeah, so Doesn't that kind of a flying thing?
The athletic big man. Yeah, right? He was known. That was part of his shtick. Like, and I'm sure countless people told him, oh, you're 400 pounds.
Yeah, what are you doing that shit for?
Stay on your feet.
You know what I'm saying? Yeah, exactly.
And he's like, F you, you know. I'm sure this is my deal, but whatever. Yeah, that's just, that's just the nature of the beast, I think, really. So kudos to those guys for going out and creating a match that got some buzz.
Sure, exactly.
Right? I dig it.
We mentioned briefly just something that you did when you were off that you never had time to do before. You said you got LASIK surgery.
Yeah, I got my eyes done, man.
Now, that is a trip. I had it done too. Like, isn't it amazing,
dude? It's a marvel of modern technology. People, you said you had it done like a decade ago,
yeah,
right? So it's been around probably 15-20 years, obviously advanced as the years have gone by. But I mean, I woke up one morning blurry. I couldn't see 10 feet in front of me, and then I go in, I get the surgery, which takes 2-3 minutes or whatever. Yeah. One eye, next eye, you put the goggles on. They numb you up beforehand. You don't feel a thing. I went home. I went to sleep for 4 or 5 hours. I wake up and I can see. I can see. Like, and then it only gets better. Like, for the next 2 months, I'm like, we're standing 50 yards away from that sign earlier today with this tiny little type, and I'm reading. Oh no, it's .com right there. He's like, what? You can see that? Laser eyes, bro. Yeah, I mean, that's the thing. You just don't have the time to do stuff like that when you're running, because you need a little bit of time to let everything heal back up and stuff. So that, and I got a new car that I drive around. It's nice. Drove it up here to Green Bay. Bought a Tesla, all electric. So that's cool. That's just something that I would have probably not done.
How does that work, the electric?
Well, so Tesla's owned by Elon Musk, who's like this just genius of a technological wizardy type guy, and they have all electric vehicles, and it's a sedan. It's not like a Nissan Leaf or whatever the other ones are. And he has taken the liberty of putting superchargers all across the world. I mean, he's got hundreds in the United States. They've got a bunch in Europe, and I think they're moving some into China and Japan now.
Well, supercharger meaning?
Meaning you – so at home, you have to plug the car in to charge it. There's no gas. It's not a hybrid. There's literally no emissions at all.
Wow.
There's only – the only thing in the car that's fluid is the wiper fluid. That's it. Nothing. You don't have to service it. None of that.
No oil?
Nothing.
Wow.
Because there's no engine. There's nothing. It's beautiful. And where the engine would be, there's a trunk. You have what they call a frunk. It's a frunk. You have extra space, which is always a trip going to the grocery store and putting your groceries in the frunk. And people are like, what is happening right now?
Right.
What is he doing? The cool thing about it is it's free. There's no... The electricity obviously is not free, but you don't pay to charge. So you drive, my car gets 270 miles to a charge, full charge. You drive, and then on their little GPS thing, they have all these superchargers plotted out where they're at. So if you're taking a long trip, it'll plot you through the superchargers. You stop, plug in, it will charge your entire battery in 45 minutes from nothing.
Wow.
For free. So, and these chargers are all in cool places. Like they're not like out in the middle of nowhere. They're like in a, like yesterday I was in Madison, Wisconsin at a mall where there was a bunch of food around. So you just stop and get a bite for a little while, hang out, you plug your car in, charge up for free, no emissions. It's a beautiful thing.
How fast does it go?
Well, so the top speed, I don't know, but the kick is the acceleration. So there's no gears, right? You don't have to shift or anything like that. Even an automatic, there's no transmission, basically, is what I'm saying. So when you hit the pedal, it's like getting shot out of a cannon. It's like, I don't know if you've ever been on one of those roller coasters that, like, instead of taking you up and dropping you, it just like just shoots you. That's what it feels like. So it goes, mine without the ludicrous mode. Don't be disappointed, Tesla owners out there. I didn't get the ludicrous mode.
Oh, you can get a ludicrous mode?
You can get a ludicrous mode.
Which goes really fast?
It goes like extra fast. Okay. It goes 0 to 60 in like 3 seconds.
Wow, that seems dangerous.
It's very quick. And this one goes 0 to 60. Mine goes 0 to 60 in like 4 seconds. So whatever. But the big sell on it for me is the auto drive feature. It drives you. It drives you. It auto steers, autopilots you, which is insanity.
How?
It reads the it has cameras all around the car, and it can detect the road lines and the cars in front of you. So it's basically like cruise control while reading the lines on the road. It knows the speed limit and all that, so you double click a little fob on the side of the steering wheel when it tells you it's ready, and then it just locks into those lines and it takes you. So when you're on the interstate, it's literally your hands free.
It's unbelievable.
Yeah, it's incredible, dude. It's incredible.
You know, it's funny because like hearing you tell me about this, I kind of heard about it, but had no idea it was this high tech. And like,
yeah,
so I'm surprised that the gas companies or Ford Motors or whatever allowed this to be made.
So that's a big issue. Actually, there are some states. So the way Tesla does their sales is not like a normal car sales situation. Like you don't buy it at a, like you can't just buy it at a lot owned by, like if you started a, you know, Chris Jericho car sales, mm-hmm. you can't sell Teslas. You have to, it's only Tesla stores, like, and you can order it online, like specifically how you want it.
Okay.
So Iowa, for example, I believe Iowa and Michigan, just out of two examples, do not have Tesla dealers. So I had to go to Chicago to buy my car. And like these states are very resistant to introducing all electric cars because obviously the more that there are, the less gas will be used, the less taxes,
exactly.
All that stuff. So that's definitely an issue. And they just unveiled the Tesla Model 3, I want to say, in March. And so my Tesla, they're expensive, right? They're an expensive car. But the Model 3 is a reasonably priced vehicle, all-electric vehicle. They've already pre-sold, if I'm not mistaken, over 500,000 models of the Tesla 3, Model 3, which is more than, say, all – like Nissan sells less than – all their models combined sell less than that in a year.
Yes, absolutely.
All their models combined. So that's going to be very interesting. Those Model 3s start shipping in late 2017, I think. So when they start doing that, it's going to be a whole new ball game.
But that's the way that the world is going.
I hope.
You know what I mean? Right. Because even like, you know, my cousin is a big oil exec up in Alberta. And he's like, there's only so much oil in the world. It's not like it makes new oil. It's like it's there. So when this oil is done, gas is done.
Yeah.
And it could be 100 years from now or 10 years from now or 1,000. I don't know. So this is now going to save gas and eliminate the need for it in that whole way.
Ideally, yeah. I mean, fossil fuels, aside from the greenhouse effect, whether you believe in climate change or not, it exists. And aside from that, there's only so much. So you have to find renewable sources of energy. Obviously, the sun is the best one. So Tesla does a really good job of trying to harness solar mm-hmm. energy. That's their next gig. They have power walls, which are basically like energy storage, home storage units that you can, you know, you can use solar panels on your house and it stores your solar energy and stuff like that. So that's the gig. That's the next step. And that's the only way, you know, to have a sustainable future in the next, you know, couple hundred years. It's the mm-hmm. only way it's going to work at the rate that we consume our fossil fuels.
It's unbelievable.
So I'm reducing my carbon footprint. That's what's happening right now. The Tesla is the first step. When I build my Daniel Bryan type house here in the next few years, that'll be the next step. So I'm working on
it. What did you think of Daniel having to retire?
Oh, it's terrible. Mm-hmm. I mean, at the end of the day, you know, his health is obviously more important than what he can give to us for, you know, our industry and stuff like that. And he's a friend of mine. I've known Brian and respected him for a really long time. For anybody that's ever met him, and you know him, he's absolutely. Literally just the greatest human.
Literally, man. Like, one of the nicest guys.
So
ever.
Awesome.
Like, for real.
Nice and funny and just a stand-up dude. You could trust him with your kids, with your house. You could literally anything. Like, he's just like, I would let him watch my dog, you know what I'm saying? And I don't let a lot of people watch my dog. So he's like just awesome, 100%. And to have to watch him, you know, I was out when he had to announce his retirement. Yeah. Not be able to be there, selfishly for me, was sad. I wanted to be able to be there and say goodbye to him and stuff like that. But man, just to watch him do that, I just, phew, that was really hard for me. I watched it at home and like I was trying so hard not to cry through that whole damn thing, trying, and I made it most of the way. And there were a couple times where like he starts talking about his father and I'm getting close and maybe like, you know,
yeah, tear in the eye.
One. But dude, at the end, like when Bree ran out there with him, I just, that was it for me. I was done. I sobbed like a baby, man. I felt like a infant just crying, crying. It was very sad. You know, I can't imagine, try to put myself in his shoes. Like, I don't know what that would feel like. I honestly
can't. Well, I mean, you kind of have a little taste of it because you just had it. It gets taken away from you, and you're done. The same thing happened with Adam. Adam was a little older, but still, he shows up one day, and it's like, hey, you're never wrestling again. Like, yeah. What? What are you talking about? I'm the champion.
Yeah.
Another guy who had to give up the championship, you know?
Yeah, that for me, I mean, I can't even compare them to those two situations because at least for me, they're like, no, 6 to 9 months, you'll be as good as new. I cannot imagine showing up one day or going to see a doctor and then all of a sudden I go from thinking I've got 10 more years on my career, whatever, retire on my own terms to having, like, no, you're just not wrestling anymore. You're just not doing it.
This whole thing that you've worked your whole life, it's all you know.
All you know.
Now what?
Because it's for the most of us, it's all we know. And you've taken time off and you've done other things. But, I mean, Brian wasn't that guy. He hadn't taken the time to do that. You know, he just all he had done. And I'm kind of the same way. And I have a bit of a fear in that way that when this is gone, I'm going to be like, what the hell do I do? I literally can't imagine that. I don't know what I would – I don't know how I would feel. It's nice to see him – you know, if you follow him on social media at all, you see kind of what he's doing a little bit now.
Building barn doors and shit.
Yeah, just getting around to doing other stuff, which is nice. And I'm sure he misses it like crazy and all, but he always had a lot of other interests that he was keen on. So, like, hopefully now once he can step away for a little while and start to get in back into those. And, you know, he looked like he was taking weightlifting a little more seriously. And
Jiu-jitsu
and stuff like that. So hopefully he'll find some things that will, satisfy his life goals, right. You know, because kudos to him. He achieved everything he ever wanted, you know, but still not being able to go on your own terms. That hurts.
When you got kind of over the hump of the injury and then the rehab and all that stuff, how far out did you know that you were going to be coming back last week?
a week beforehand, like 2 weeks, maybe at most. I was just in the gym one afternoon. I get a call from Mark Carano. He says, all right, here's the plan. You're coming back at Extreme Rules. I said, what? We had not discussed anything about this. Nobody had texted me. How are you doing?
Nothing. What do you think about this?
Yeah, what do you think about this idea? You know, do you have any ideas of your own? And I had been feeling good, so I'd kind of been, you know, texting Triple H and Michael Hayes and just being like, hey, if you hear anything – buzz me. Like, I'd like to be part of the creative process on this. It's important, I think. So let's have an open line of communication on that, because sometimes it's not always like that. So I gave him what I thought was a nice advance on that. And then all of a sudden, you know, they're saying you're back. I'm like, what do you mean? I'm not even cleared. So Carano's like, yeah, we're working on that. You'll go down to Florida for, a week. So they sent me down to Florida for, I think I went for 5 days. A week was a little, I didn't need a week.
Right.
5 days, got in the ring every day with the staff down there.
Who'd you work with down there?
In the ring?
Yeah, I just think as a partner.
Oh, Ty Dillinger.
Okay.
Yeah, perfect 10 Ty. I mean, he's been around the block. He's so easy to work with. I was thankful they didn't stick me with somebody else, because, I mean, you put me with one of those green guys, I'd be like, I don't know.
Oh, absolutely.
Guys. Yeah, I was nervous. But Ty's 100% professional, super good and easy, and it was fun to – that's actually the first time. Like, he's been in developmental twice, but we never crossed paths, never. Not on the indies, not in developmental. He was gone before I got there, and then I was on the road before he came back. So we literally never crossed paths. But he's one of those guys that I got in the ring with, and it was just like,
yeah, you know, easy. I mean? Yeah. Well, you want someone you can trust.
Yeah, and I had no problems with that. Once you start talking and tying up and just rolling around, you could feel like it was going to be super casual.
Was there something like, I had a bad disc problem years ago, and actually that's when I started doing yoga, and I was told the only thing you shouldn't do is the moonsault, the lion salt.
Yeah.
Which, of course, tell us that sort of stuff, and all I can think about is doing it.
Yeah.
So the first time I did it, I was really scared, and then it happened. It's like, that was easy. And then you start. Was there anything that you did to really try and, like, all right, I'm going to test out the old knee?
The pedigree.
Oh, wow. That's right.
Yeah.
Landing on your knees.
The one thing they needed me to do at Extreme Rules, I was like, because so they took my patella tendon, which is like right in the front there. They took the patella tendon, and it's it made that front of my knee kind of numb and a little sore to the touch. That's the one that kind of gets sore the most. So they took a third of it. So now it's only 2/3. And they said it doesn't mess with the strength, but it takes a while for it to feel normal. So of all the things that I had done, I had been back training pretty hard for about 2-3 months now at this point, squatting, deadlifting, jumping, landing, jump rope, all everything you could think of. But like touching my knee to the ground was still very weird because I just didn't have, I couldn't feel it and it hurt a little bit. So it was like, I just kind of avoided it, you know, just something that I didn't mess with. And with my wrestling school, I have the ring up. So I'd been in the ring a little bit. I'd taken a bump or two. That's all, because God, those suck after you haven't done them for 6 months.
It's like getting thrown a bucket of cold water in your face.
Yeah, I took one. I'm like, why? Why are we doing this? What is this? Oh no! But it's different when you're in a match. But
yeah.
So yeah, it is like a bucket of cold water. Like if you're sleeping.
You do that for him.
Yeah, so he called me. He says, here we go. We're going to send you to Florida. So I was in the ring with Ty, and the pedigree was the one thing I had to do. So they have, you know, I had a pad and tried it, and I was like, "What? Let's just do it. Let me just do it. I just need to do it once. It'll be fine." So I did like a couple of like just kind of dropped to my knees, just like, all right, here we go. I can do this. But then like the big one, the kick, the hook, the big jump back. And then I, you know, once I got the one out of the way, I was, you know, you hit and you assess for a minute. Okay.
Yeah.
Things are good.
Yeah.
We're in the clear. All right. Sweet. Let's do it all day. Yeah. So that was the big one. And, you know, had a little bit of adrenaline because it was the first time I had done it since the injury. But like, it was a different animal when I got out, when I ran down at, and you know, in Jersey, it was, place was going nuts. That you could have chop my arm off. I wouldn't.
Did you run down from the stage, or were you under the ring?
No. I ran out.
Gotcha. Because you just appeared. So
yeah. I'm quick on that ramp, man. I was a lot shorter than WrestleMania, and I made that one super quick. So, yeah.
It was funny when you appeared. I was like, "Why is AJ back in the ring?" And I was like, "Wait, that's not AJ. What? It's Rollins."
Yeah, we did a good job of keeping it a secret. It's hard in this day and age. It helped that like the internet had been speculating ish since like the last pay per view that I was like backstage at Payback in Chicago, and I'm like, you idiots. So then like they speculated again, he's backstage at, you know, in New Jersey for Extreme Rules. So people were kind of like, yeah, right, that's not even the case. So like it was a good surprise. I was sequestered on the bus all day, and I didn't need to be in the building, so I didn't even come inside until their match started. Went straight to Gorilla and hung out and just
off you go.
It was weird too, because if you've ever been, I mean, if you've been sequestered on the bus before,
a couple times, yeah.
Yeah, you if you don't feel like you're part of the show,
because
you're just watching it on a bus, it's like being in your living room on TV, you know? The building's right next door, but you don't hear any of that. You're just like watching it. So I'm just like, I'm like, man, I feel like I should be more nervous than this.
Yeah, and then you wish you could tell somebody, like, someone come talk to you.
Yeah.
Just sitting there with nothing to do for hours.
Yeah, I took a nap. I'm like, what am I supposed to do? So, so I'm doing my thing. And then, but once I got into the building and you start to feel that energy of people, kind of the rumble and stuff, and then I got into Gorilla and, you know, I said hi to Vince and all that good stuff, and I was like, all right, here we are. Now we're ready to go. Doing push-ups and Gorilla, getting fired up. And then once, you know, I get the, all right, go, out the dang, and it's just like, it was awesome. It was a good feeling.
Back home,
well, yeah, man.
One quick question. Whatever happened with the curb stomp? Was it like, why did they not let you do that anymore?
It was right after I won the title at WrestleMania, and, you know, I just think it was the first time Vince had thought about it. And he just decided that, because they're sending footage down to the Today Show, right, to show, you know, because I'm there and I took the flight that night and they're showing me and they have the footage to back up when we're talking and stuff like that. And a lot of it is me doing the stomp, aside from it having a fairly violent name and connotation, right? But just the visual of it, he was watching it and he thought to himself that it's easily imitatable by young children, which a lot of our stuff is, but for whatever reason, he just didn't. He thought
just stuck in his
stuck in his head as a champion, as his top guy. He just didn't want that to be the lasting image or a reason. He didn't want to put any guns in the bullet, so to speak. He didn't want to have any reason for people to be like, "Oh, what the hell?" You know what I'm saying? So he just removed it from the equation. And I fought it tooth and nail because I love the move. You know,
it's a great looking move.
It's a great looking move. It's super easy if you've, you know, it's super easy. It's not, you know, a lot of people were like, oh, it was dangerous, giving people concussions. I'm like, no, it really wasn't.
Yeah,
if you know how to do it, it's a very easy move. It's not, you can do it to pretty much anybody, you know, it comes out of nowhere, easy counters to it, lots of good things going for it, except that Vince was like, well, I could see Shane doing this very easily to Stephanie when they were kids. Like, he had that vision in his head of Stephanie lying prone on the ground and Shane just stomping her in the back of the head. And I'm like, what do you say? What do I even say to that? Yeah. It's a man and his children. I'm like, no, you're stupid, Vince.
Yeah.
He could punch her in the face, too. You know what I mean? Like, there's all sorts of arguments, but at the end of the day, it's irrelevant. It doesn't matter. Mm-hmm. And, you know, it's cool. How many people have band moves? You know what I'm saying?
Did you try and think of something else, or was it said that you're just going to use the pedigree?
No, the pedigree was a fight. Not a fight, but it took a little while to get there because I was like, I had some other signature stuff that I thought we could use for finishers. Like, I did the super kick with the guy on his knees for a while, which I will still do. Mm-hmm. But I did that, and that's an easy one. And then I did, trying to think, what else? Talked about doing some submissions, but nothing was really good. And then, like, maybe doing the springboard knee for a finish, too. The knee to the side of the head. But I just didn't like this. I didn't like having to set up.
Yeah,
you know?
That's true.
I just need something quick and you can do to everybody. I mean, the knee you can do to everybody, but something quick. And I just didn't like the knee. And I didn't like the risk of having to springboard because then, you know. Sometimes.
Every time I look at AJ, he has to do it every night, multiple times.
Yeah. Yeah, and I'm like, ugh. But the pedigree was something that I feel very fortunate to have it as a finisher. A, because it's got a built-in response.
Sure.
Everyone knows that's the end of the match for the most part because Hunter had done it for years and years and years. And there's two guys in the history of the company that have ever done it. Myself and Triple H.
Right.
So that's good company. And it fit with what we were doing storyline-wise,
it fit.
Yeah. So I kind of, funny story, I texted Hunter about it, you know, when I had the idea. I was like, hey, what would you think about me using the pedigree? And he made some sort of like Hunter joke that I took as him like, you know, just skirting around and not wanting to say anything. And I was like, I got an idea. So I went directly to Vince and then we were looking for new finishers. And I'm like, Vince, what would you think about me using the pedigree? And he, you know, did his Vince thing where he just sits and thinks about it for a minute and stares off. And then he looked at me and he was like, I love it. It's great. It's perfect. Fits right in with the story. That's it. And I was like, all right, I win. Excellent. So I kind of went around Hunter to get to him, but I don't think he cares. Mm-hmm. At the end of the day, you know, he's going to retire. And I did it as a tribute, you know, as a way for, you know, his legacy to kind of live on in another generation, although he's got plenty of those things. But this was just one of those.
But at some point, too, there will be a Rollins Triple H match, and what a story you can tell with that.
There you go, right? Yeah,
you know?
Lots of stuff going on there.
Great.
So that'll be pretty sweet. It'll be funny for him to have to take the pedigree.
I know, son of a bitch. He used to do it when he would just keep your arms locked.
I said,
so you couldn't even, you eat the mat face first.
Yeah, so I'll be like, you do it, but you just hold on the whole time, right? That's how,
exactly. Here, do it. If you have it, I'll give you an extra 20, give him one the way that he used to do it. Just as we're getting ready to wrap up here, there's a spot I want to talk to you about. It's one of my all-time favorite spots from one of your matches.
Oh, okay.
Which is from WrestleMania when you worked with Orton. The finish of that match was absolutely incredible. You go for the curb stomp, he stands up, you fly 6 feet in the air, and he hits you with the damn RKO. What a great, great finish. Maybe one of my favorite finishes.
Once in a lifetime. Honestly, one time that's I came up with the idea a couple weeks beforehand, ran it by Cesaro. He said, I think you can do that. Okay, cool. Cesaro's a different animal than Randy.
Yeah.
So we get to rehearsals that week. And I pitch it to him, and he's like, you know, Randy's like, are you sure about that? I don't know. So our producers are Mercury and Noble, and Joey's a super genius. Jamie is too, but Joey was. He based for it a couple times. Joey's a good foot shorter than Randy, so it's a different height. But Joey and I could get the pop-up down pretty good. Randy and I kept missing it. And neither of us really were interested in taking the bump itself, you know, on a Thursday afternoon or whatever, because it kind of sucked.
Yeah.
And in a practice ring in front of nobody. So we never got it. One time practicing that day, we got the pop-up, but we never actually did the full thing. We come back to Mania Sunday and we're talking, and we had come up with a plan B, like out of a, you know, he was going to get me out of a springboard or something like that, you know, which we've done, and everyone's seen it. And Randy's one of these guys who likes to play it safe sometimes. He likes to bat 1,000, he said, and I have no problem with that.
Yeah, he eliminates any chance for error.
Nope, I have no problem with that. I was like, screw it, dude, you know, I get it. You want to bat 1,000, but, you know, and he was like, yeah, you know what? I always play it safe. He's like, I always play it safe every time. And that's great, but I want to, let's just try it. The hell with it. And I'm like, you sure? And he's like, yeah, you know what? I play it safe. I have, you know, plenty of WrestleMania matches. They're fine, but I want to have, let's just try it. Let's just, if we can hit it, it'll be awesome. It'll be the greatest thing. Let's just do it. So we get out there. We're doing the match. It's hot as balls out there. It's middle of the day, right? It's 5 o'clock or 6 o'clock, whatever. We started early that day, and the sun's out, the mats are hot, you're blown up, hair's drying out. I'm just like, this sucks. And we got to the do-do-do-do-do-do-do, and like when I ran and I put my foot, it was just one of those where I hit it and I knew it. I got up in the air, I got super flat, we made eye contact. He hits the thing and he forgets to cover me. If you watch it back, he stands up immediately, starts Randy firing up, however he does, which was a complete shoot. And then I think Cone was our referee, or maybe Kyoto, and he's like, cover him, cover him. And he totally
he was so excited that it worked.
He was so excited that it worked, and he, you know, hit the cover, deep cover, all fired up, gets to the back, great times, yada 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 yada. On an aside, if you ask Johnny Ace, that was his idea.
That was a good idea, huh?
Great idea. You like that? You like that finish, kid? Yeah, that was me. That was me.
Yeah, because he's the one who wrote it on the piece of paper and told the truck to film it.
Yeah. So, yeah, that's the story behind the RKO. We'll never do it again, but it was awesome.
You only had to do it once.
Yeah.
Who are you excited to work with now that you're back?
Everybody, but AJ mostly.
Have you worked with him before?
Once.
Okay.
One time, 10 years ago. So
really?
we're two different humans at this point, you know what I'm saying? I was 19, he was 28, something like that. It was two different people. Like, now we're just totally different performers. It'll be great to get back out there. I mean, anyway, it was in a VFW in Muscatine or something in front of, like, my friends. And right, my grandma was there, you know. This one, the next time, I'm sure it'll be in a much bigger stage. So it'll be nice to have that full circle. And he's just a dude that I just love. Yeah. He's just great. So that'll be awesome. And, you know, Sammy, I haven't worked with Sammy in a while, and so he'll be cool to get in the ring with as well.
So many different combinations, man. Rollins is back, baby.
Yeah, back, and hopefully better than ever.
And you can see better too.
I can see much better. No contacts. Yeah,
that's the worst. Getting up in the plane, having to take your contacts off and red eyes.
They're just like, stuck to you.
That was my favorite thing. Just throwing all that shit away.
Yeah, it's the best.
Cool, man. Thank
right
you.
Right on.
Always a good time with Seth Rollins, the guy that I send all my fan art to, and vice versa. So keep the fan art coming, and keep Seth and I's relationship going. It's great to have him back at the WWE, and great to have him back on Talk Is Jericho, and great to have you guys here. Thanks for supporting me and Seth and all the great sponsors of this podcast, and that includes Amazon. Easiest way to support Talk Is Jericho, go to podcastone.com, click on the Killer Deals button in the top corner of the page, then hit the Talk Is Jericho button. All my Amazon links are there. You can get just about anything you can think of on Amazon. If you send me a pic of what you bought on Amazon, I'll share it and I'll follow you as well. Become a Talk Is Jericho Amazon warrior. Send me the picture of what you bought on the Twitter at Talk Is Jericho. And don't forget, there's Amazon links for the USA, the UK, Canada. Every time you use Talk Is Jericho Amazon links, Amazon kicks back a couple bucks to this show to help us cover production costs. No hidden fees, extra charges. Don't forget, podcastone.com. Click on the Killer Deals button in the top right corner of the page, UAG, then hit Talk Is Jericho. All my great sponsors are there as well. DDP and the DDP Yoga Now app. Go to ddpyoga.com/Jericho now. Get the program and get 3 free months of the DDP Yoga Now app. I got to do some DDP Yoga tonight. Back is kind of stiff. You can also check out Uber. Make sure you drive with Uber if you want to be your own boss. Create your own schedule. Thank you for listening. Keep listening for the 60-second AP news headlines coming up next. And keep listening for next Wednesday. First time ever podcast for one of the legit former head writers of the WWE, the head of creative himself. I'm not talking about the low-hanging fruit that were in the WWE for a month or 2 months, or the guys that used to get Vince McMahon coffee that have now become podcast quote-unquote experts. I am talking about a man who worked for 10 years as the head of WWE creative. I'm talking about Brian Gewirtz. You guys know the name. Now you're getting a chance to know the guy. Great guy. He's now one of the executives. It's for $7 Productions, which is the production company of The Rock. He and The Rock worked so well together that Rock took him on when he formed his own production company. Brian's living large in Hollywood now, but for 10 years, maybe even longer, he was the head writer, the head of creative of WWE. Nobody Nobody was higher than him other than Vince and Stephanie and Triple H, okay? People reported to him. He hired, he fired, he made decisions, but he wasn't always that way. He started out at the bottom and worked his way to the top, much like your tried and true faithful podcast host right here. So, Brian Gewirtz will be here on Wednesday. You are not going to want to miss this. Check him out. Have a great weekend and a big yeah, boy.
You can download new episodes of Talk is Jericho every Wednesday and Friday at podcastone.com. That's podcastone.com.